U.S. Secretary of State Madeleine Albright said today that NATO is taking seriously European concerns about possible health risks posed by depleted uranium. Italy has reported several deaths from leukemia among its soldiers. Deaths from cancer have also been reported among former French, Belgian, Portuguese, and Dutch peacekeepers. Artillery containing tons of the weakly radioactive metal were used by the U.S. in Bosnia and Kosovo, and some analysts worry that the controversy could threaten the NATO alliance. That possibility astonishes many physicists, who say it is extremely unlikely depleted uranium poses a serious health threat. NPR's David Kestenbaum reports.
Steve Fetter has a rod of depleted uranium in his basement. He's a physicist and professor of public policy at the University of Maryland. He has it so his daughter can do a science fair experiment. Fetter doesn't bring it places because it makes people a little nervous. If you did pick it up, you would notice something a little strange. It's only about the size of a soda can, but it feels impossibly heavy. Fetter says that's why the military likes it. They put a pencil-sized piece of it in some artillery shells as a penetrator.
And in the Gulf War, there were one case in which a depleted uranium penetrator went all the way through one Iraqi tank, destroying it, and then another Iraqi tank behind it and destroyed that tank also.
Depleted uranium is a leftover. To make fuel for nuclear weapons or power plants, the uranium from the Earth is converted into a gas, and the lighter, more radioactive isotopes are separated out. What's left is depleted uranium, which is about 60% as radioactive as the stuff that comes out of the ground. It's pretty mild. Fetter has calculated that you'd have to be encased in depleted uranium for 6 hours to get a dose of radiation equivalent to a chest x-ray. It would be worse to inhale uranium dust, however, and when uranium artillery hits, about a tenth of the uranium does turn to dust, he says. The question then is how much someone could possibly inhale. Ron Catherine, a former head of the Health Physics Society, says the answer is not very much.
Even where there have been chemical explosions that have resulted in large amounts of uranium being released in the atmosphere, people who were right there on top of the explosion perhaps only inhaled a few hundred milligrams, maybe as much as a gram.
If a NATO soldier did somehow manage to inhale a whole gram, his or her risk of developing leukemia from that would be about 1 in 100,000 or less. That number comes mostly from studies done on the effects of bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Catherine says it's extremely unlikely the uranium weapons gave anyone cancer.
I think there would be almost complete unanimity, I'd say more than 90% of the health physics and radiobiology community, would agree with this statement, with what I've said.
Tara Thornton, an activist with the Military Toxics Project, does disagree. She doesn't trust the physicists' calculations and thinks more research is needed.
We should take the precautionary principle and say that until we can prove that these weapons aren't harmful, we need to at least take a step back and have a moratorium, put a moratorium on the use of these weapons. We're eventually a Military Toxics Project, and our member groups are working towards a ban on this weapon.
But other opponents are hard to find in the U.S. The Union of Concerned Scientists is not focusing on the issue. Watchdogs like Physicians for Social Responsibility and the Natural Resources Defense Council both doubt that depleted uranium could have caused cancer. Part of their skepticism stems from the fact that the National Academy's Institute of Medicine has already looked into depleted uranium as a possible cause of Gulf War syndrome. 10 times more uranium was used in the Gulf War than in the Balkans. The panel reviewed long-term studies of uranium workers, some of whom inhaled large doses of uranium. The Institute looked for a connection to lung cancer and concluded there probably wasn't one. Steve Fetter agrees that chunks of weaponry and destroyed tanks should be buried to protect children or souvenir hunters, but he's baffled by the panic in Europe.
You know, it is frustrating for a scientist because we're used to thinking very rigidly, logically, rationally about these risks, and to most scientists who have looked at the issue, the doses are very small compared to natural doses of radiation. The risks appear to be very small, certainly compared to all the risks of combat. And so it is puzzling to me, and it's difficult for me to explain why it's the center of such controversy.
Health physicist Ron Catherine blames the media, in part, for not bothering to call the rank-and-file scientists. And some researchers wonder why august scientific groups like Britain's Royal Society are investigating, since an investigation could legitimize people's fears. Michael Clark, a physicist and spokesperson for the National Radiological Protection Board in England, calls this the empty chair problem. If officials refuse to participate in a discussion, people point to the empty chair and see that as a sign of having something to hide.
You know, okay, we, you know, don't worry your silly heads about this. We know all, and it's not worth investigating. That does make some people more suspicious. So it doesn't hurt to have a proper, thorough study of all the issues.
NATO also appears wary of offering an empty chair. The organization yesterday pledged to gather and share data on depleted uranium openly. NATO Secretary General Lord Robertson said the goal was to focus more on the facts and less on the emotion. David Kestenbaum, NPR News, Washington.